I am going to take the next minute to introduce slowly our next speaker. By the way, before I do that, I want to again thank Mr. and Mrs. Zerblis, if they're here. Thank you very much for your little guidebook to speaking Southern. I've been practicing, and I promise that tonight at the banquet I will speak in Southern. I practiced at lunch and everyone got very annoyed, but I'm going to do better. I'm not going to use the mic. Oh, I will use the microphone. What the heck? Our next speaker is Mr. Terry Gordon. He is presently head of technical services for the Country Music Foundation, our host for this conference. He has a master's degree in history and library science from Florida State University. His wide-ranging interest in American ethnic and popular music led him in 1977 to begin the study of rockabilly. And as I said earlier, if you were here last night for the films, you got a short example of it in a film of Marty Robbins singing a rockabilly song. And rockabilly, as I have been told here by Mr. Gordon, is a prime example of the American musical melting pot. It certainly is. Mr. Gordon is now in the final stages of compiling a comprehensive discography of country rock and roll for eventual publication. And I would like to take up no more of his time since we have a lengthy afternoon. I'd like you all to welcome Mr. Terry Gordon from the Country Music Foundation.
Thank you for coming. I'll say at the beginning that anyone offended by rock and roll is welcome to go look for records during this hour. I had requested that a hardwood dance floor be installed for this session, but the hotel said that was too expensive, so I'm supposed to tell you to refrain from jumping into the aisles and doing the bop chicken or time warp. I tried, but I couldn't come up with a better introduction to the rockabilly movement than a 1955 recording by Hard Rock Gunner entitled I'll Give 'Em Rhythm. I'll turn it over to Hard Rock for the next 3 minutes or so. Listen to the lyrics of this song. It is tongue-in-cheek. What it conveys is the dilemma facing country music in 1955, the solution adopted by many singers at that time, and the controversy which surrounded that solution.
I can never be the same, and you can see. doggone sad that I couldn't have a fright. I wanna sing my country song the way I used to do. I really love the old highway, but what am I to do? I tried it through these years, and now look at my tears. It killed my soul to pick for gold, but that's how it appears. I'll give up rhythm, rhythm, rhythm with a solid beat.
As the name suggests, rockabilly was the hybrid musical style formed when rock and roll and hillbilly crossed paths in the 1950s. For 3 years, from 1956 to 1958, this union dominated the popularity charts in both country and pop music. It was a period of unprecedented prosperity for much of the country music industry, but a time of gloom for traditionalists who refused to accept the new trend. What the traditionalists could not or did not want to see was that rockabilly, or something like it, was a commercial necessity for the industry in the mid-50s. After a boom period in the years after World War II, country music was quickly losing ground to the new rhythm and blues rock and roll craze. As black music gained in popularity, sales of traditional records fell, and many country radio stations changed format to rhythm and blues. The spontaneous response of many singers and record companies was to fight fire with fire by incorporating rhythm and blues elements into country music. This trend was the subject of great controversy, with purists arguing that R&B characteristics had no place in country music. Rhythm and blues advocates, on the other hand, countered with the historical argument that country music had been enriched by the influence of black music since the days of Jimmy Rogers and Bob Wills. The roots of rockabilly lay in country artists recording cover versions of rhythm and blues songs. This practice was rare in the 40s, but gradually became more common between 1950 and 1954. The most important record company in this pre-rockabilly era was King Records of Cincinnati. King was unique among independent labels in being strong in both the R&B and country field. The company's artist and repertoire staff, notably black producer Henry Glover, encouraged black and white artists to share material. The ablest and most enthusiastic of the King country performers who experimented with rhythm and blues was piano player Moon Mullican. What follows is a segue which joins together parts of the original Roy Brown recording of Grandpa Stole My Baby with Mulligan's 1953 cover version. Don't look for this in the stores. Allen manufactured this. Another important company in the prehistory of rockabilly was Philadelphia's Essex Records. Bill Haley and his Comets recorded for Essex in a style which blended Western swing with rhythm and blues. In 1953, his Crazy Man Crazy became the first white rock and roll record to make the national charts. Haley differed from the later wave of rockabillies in that he consciously abandoned the country audience when he turned to rock and roll. Nevertheless, the 1953 Comets were still essentially a country swing band, with Billy Williamson's steel guitar being used in place of an R&B saxophone.
When I go out and I want a treat, I need a man with a solid beat. Take my chin and we dance about. When I start rocking, boy, we start to shout, shout. Crazy man, crazy. Crazy man, crazy. Crazy man, crazy. My night music's gone.
Meanwhile, within country music, the R&B trend was gaining momentum. As early as October 1953, Red Foley's Shake a Hand became the first country R&B cover to chart. In the summer of 1954, three rock and roll influenced discs reached the country top 10. The most interesting was Carl Smith's Go Boy Go. The song was not unlike earlier Smith efforts, such as the number one single, Hey Joe, but its insistent bass, heavy drumming, and repeated riffs drew upon current rock and roll conventions.
Go, boy, go, love is easy made. All you gotta know is the tricks of a trade. Her eyes will tear, yes or no. And when you get sick, go, go, boy, go. Hug her tight with all your might, be different from the rest. And when she's near, whisper, dear, you're the one that I love best. Go, boy, go when the time is right, and take advantage of a pretty moonlight. Don't you lose your gal, cause you're too slow. When you get the signal, go, boy, go.
That same summer of 1954, the country R&B focus was beginning to shift to the Sun Record Company of Memphis. Sam Phillips, president of Sun, had been looking for a white singer who could deliver a song with the energy and impact of the best rhythm and blues performers. He found such a singer in Elvis Presley. Rockabilly would have happened without Presley, but it would not have sounded the same, and it probably would not have become the major cross-market craze that it did. Presley, Phillips, guitarist Scotty Moore, and bass player Bill Black together developed a new and original sound, which was a synthesis of such diverse elements as black blues and white gospel music. Presley's Sun releases and his grueling schedule of personal appearances throughout the South won him acclaim in Billboard, Cashbox, and Country and Western Jamboree as the best new country artist of 1955. Here are excerpts from his first and last Sun releases, That's All Right and Mystery Train. Back. Papa done told
coach's long horn. Train I ride, 16 coach's long horn. Well, that long black train got my baby and gone.
Presley sound was one of the most significant country music developments of 1955, but it was the exception rather than the rule for country rock and roll records of that year. More typical were uninspired cover recordings and novelty-oriented songs. The Sons of the Pioneers, a veteran Western group with a proud history, released the Force Tennessee Rock and Roll in May. A much more effective major label rock and roller from 1955 was Columbia's Marty Robbins. This versatile Arizonan's contributions to rock and roll came in two very different phases, the Presley-type rockers of 1955 to 1956 and the smooth rock ballads of 1956 to 1958. Maybelline from an August 1955 session is typical of the earlier sound. Presley's growing popularity soon attracted the attention of RCA's Steve Sholes, who paid the enormous sum of $35,000 for his contract. While Sun and Sam Phillips had made Presley into a fast-rising country star, Sholes intended to promote him in all three markets, country, R&B, and pop. Moreover, the principal medium of exposure would be primetime network television, where millions could see Presley's dynamic performing style. In retrospect, both of these decisions can justifiably be called brilliant. On January 28, 1956, Presley debuted his first RCA single on CBS TV's stage show. Public reaction was swift and positive, and Heartbreak Hotel soon topped both the country and pop charts. This was the beginning of the rockabilly boom. Some of the credit for rockabilly's national breakthrough must go to Carl Perkins, the second of Sam Phillips' rockabilly discoveries. Blue Suede Shoes entered the Hot 100 the same week as Heartbreak Hotel.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now, go cat, go, but don't you
The success of Presley and Perkins touched off a nationwide craze for country-flavored rock and roll. Thousands of singers from coast to coast adopted the flashy appearance and dynamic sound of rockabilly. Most of these artists achieved success only on the local level, but some became regional, national, or even international stars. In 1956 especially, the field was flooded with close Presley sound-alikes. Among the best was Virginian Gene Vincent, whose Bebopalula earned him the industry's praise as Presley's strongest rival. As the male-dominated rockabilly fad gained momentum, it was inevitable that someone would test the commercial potential of a female rockabilly. Steve Sholes of RCA was among the first when, with Presley's permission, he began promoting 15-year-old Janis Martin as the female Elvis Presley. Martin paid tribute to her mentor with the 1956 recording My Boy Elvis. Nationwide popularity of rockabilly led more and more traditional singers to try their hand at the Presley sound. Among them was Texas honky-tonk singer George Jones, who at 24 years of age was just beginning to establish a national reputation. How Come It appeared in May 1956 under the transparent pseudonym of Thumper Jones. Fairly early in the trend, however, it became apparent that very few people were going to achieve widespread success by simply copying Presley's sound. The rock and roll era was a time of unprecedented musical experimentation as artists and record companies competed for the attention of the fickle teenage market. Once the industry learned that no one could beat Presley at his own game, rockabilly became more varied and was able to maintain its commercial vitality much longer than it might have otherwise. While the Presley influence was unavoidable, the most successful rockabillies in the years 1956 to 1958 used his style as the foundation for an original approach. We'll now explore some of the artists who were able to establish distinctive identities within the broad field of country rock and roll. Many of these were themselves trendsetters. By far the most popular rockabilly substyle was the rockaballad, which could appeal to listeners put off by the excesses of the frantic rockers. Marty Robbins, whose earlier Maybelline we've already heard, was again in the forefront of this sound with the 1956 hit Singin' the Blues.
Well, I never felt more like singing the blues, 'cause I never thought that I'd ever lose your love. Why did you do me this way? Well, I never felt more like crying all night, 'cause everything's wrong and nothing ain't right without you. You got me singing the blues.
Another immensely popular rockabilly singer was the young Conway Twitty. Twitty has accounted for over 30 number one country singles in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, but none has outsold his 1958 classic, It's Only Make Believe. Johnny Cash was responsible for another rockabilly substyle. Although he rarely recorded flat-out rock and roll, Cash had much in common with Sun label mates Presley and Perkins, including small combo accompaniment, sparse, heavily rhythmic arrangement, and the teen appeal necessary to cross over into the pop market. Get Rhythm, which we'll hear now, was the flip side of Cash's first pop hit, I Walk the Line.
Get rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get rhythm. When you get the blues, get a rock and roll feeling in your bones, but tap on your toes. Get gone, get rhythm. When you get the blues, a little shoeshine boy, he never gets low down, but he's got the dirtiest job in town. Bending low at the people's feet on a windy corner of a dirty street. Will I ask him while he shines my shoes how'd he keep from getting the blues? He grinned as he raised his little head. He popped his shoeshine rag and then he said, get a rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get a rhythm.
When the Everly Brothers became household names in 1957, their brother duet sound was totally new to pop ears, but it was firmly established in the country tradition, having enjoyed its heyday in the 1930s with rural radio stars like the Delmore Brothers and the Blue Sky Boys. In adapting the decades-old duet traditions to rockabilly, the Everlys became the first brother duet to cross over into the pop market with 1957's Bye Bye Love. Jerry Lee Lewis single-handedly brought the piano into a position of prominence in white rock and roll. His Pumpin' Piano was responsible for 4 million sellers in a row before a 1958 scandal all but ruined his career for years to come. Whole Lot of Shaking Going On was his first hit in the summer of 1957. Buddy Holly's lasting influence on popular music stands in sharp contrast to the brevity of his career. He died in February 1959, only 18 months after his rise to fame. Holly's distinctive vocal and guitar styles were showcased in his earliest hits, Peggy Sue, issued by Coral under his name, and That'll Be the Day, issued by Brunswick under the group name The Crickets. Ricky Nelson grew up in the public eye as part of the top-rated situation comedy The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. In 1957, he parlayed this weekly television exposure into a stupendously successful recording career. Surprisingly, this suburban California teenager made his initial impact via authentic-sounding rockabilly, such as the country and pop hit Stood Up. Multi-talented Eddie Cochran hit upon a distinctive style with the 1958 hit Summertime Blues, on which he is purported to play all instruments, a pioneering example of studio overdubbing. Summertime. Gradually, in order to remain commercially viable, rockabilly evolved away from its country roots. By 1959, the new country-bred rock and rollers were using material and instrumentation which were almost indistinguishable from the At the same time that rockabilly was experiencing internal dilution, it also began to face overwhelming external pressures. Within the pop field, new fads developed which eroded the market for country-oriented rock and roll. Among these were the teen idol sound of Fabian and Frankie Avalon, the Italian vocal group sound of Dion and the Belmonts, and the folk music revival spearheaded by the Kingston Trio. Within country music, rockabilly fell victim to the pressure of two forces, one old and one new. Embittered traditionalists, who had never accepted the style as a legitimate part of country music, complained that not enough music was being produced for older country fans. Also, the new pop-influenced adult Nashville sound gradually replaced rockabilly as the most profitable strain of country music. The combined effect was to lead the industry to cease catering to the teenage market for years to come. Rockabilly's contributions to country music have been fourfold. First, it enabled the industry to cope with the rock and roll onslaught of the mid-50s. Second, it gave hundreds of country artists, including such future superstars as Conway Twitty and Mickey Gilley, their first opportunity to break into the music industry. Third, rockabilly's mass success in the lucrative pop market served as an inspiration for later crossover-minded producers and singers. And fourth, rockabilly characteristics have lingered in later country styles from the Nashville sound to the outlaw movement. The influence on popular music has been more profound. More than any other factor, rockabilly made the electric guitar the second voice of rock, and the country-type string band, guitars, bass, and drum, the most common form of accompaniment. Moreover, the sound of rockabilly has reasserted its appeal periodically in the music of such artists as the early Beatles and Creedence Clearwater Revival. Today, the United States and Western Europe are in the midst of a full-fledged rockabilly revival, in which groups like the Stray Cats are enjoying top 10 hits with a sound which harkens back to 1956. That's all I have to say. Any questions? Not a one. Okay.
Thank you very much. Can I have your attention, please?